I came to Planned Parenthood seeking women's healthcare services.
I came to Planned Parenthood for birth control.
They made a priority to make sure that I knew all of the information and that I felt comfortable.
Because the atmosphere here is one of acceptance and understanding and health.
Why would I go anywhere else?
We are Planned Parenthood Southwest Ohio, the region's most trusted reproductive health care provider. Go to ppswo.org to find the health center nearest you.
Blog Talk Radio.
To lesson 62 in our study of the Book of Acts. This is your host, Andy Young, and I want to thank you for joining us tonight on Blog Talk Radio for another Tuesday night Bible study. We've been away for a few weeks, but we're ready to get back into the groove. We're in the home stretch now, and we've only got about five more lessons, I believe, before we finish this book. So let's get into it, shall we? The phone number, if you'd like to be a part of the program tonight, is area code 347-855-8317. Again, that's area code 347-855-8317. Of course, if you are a Skype user, you have a Skype account, simply go ahead and click on the Skype button that you see on the program screen. That is a free connection for you to connect using your Skype account. If you have questions or comments, you can email us on the program at mail@ttank.com. That's mail@ttank.com. I know Paul checks that account regularly, and we do have several people that do send in comments and questions on quite a regular basis. I know a lot of people like to remain anonymous for various reasons, and that's perfectly fine. We completely understand that. If you'd like to make the other way you can make comments on the program is simply scroll down on the program screen, and you'll see a place down there at the bottom where you can enter comments using either your Facebook account or Twitter or what have you. So you can do that there. So go ahead and take your Bibles. And please turn to the book of Acts, chapter 25. We are picking up where we left off several weeks ago. We've had a lot of interruptions. We've had the tank conference several weeks ago. Paul and I have been busy with various things, housekeeping things having to do with post-conference type of deal, editing videos and compiling audio and video from the conference and trying to get those things posted to YouTube and whatnot. And so we're finally getting back into our regular routine here on Tuesday nights. So we're going to be looking at Acts chapter 25 tonight, and we'll pick up with verse 13, and we're going to go all the way through verse 27 tonight. So Acts 25, verses 13 through 27. And while you're turning there, by way of review of tonight, I want to begin with a very brief history lesson. And I mean very brief. I don't by any means aim to get into any kind of in-depth study on the history of the Roman Empire, but it is important for us to understand the historical context so that we can get we can better understand not only where the Book of Acts fits into all this, but also these next few lessons in particular. I mentioned this, if you recall, last time. The last time in these last few chapters in the book of Acts contains very little theology, but it's very heavy in the historical narrative. And so for this reason, I think a little bit of historical background will be helpful. If you have been listening to any of the most recent lessons, you may have heard Paul and Susan, you know, when we get together at the end of the lesson, where we have comments and discussion. And Paul himself has remarked many times here in these last few lessons that, hey, I don't really have much to add in the way of comments here. I don't really have much to add. And that's because, and he shared this with us, that in his experience, in his life as a believer and attending church, there was very little time given to these particular chapters at the end of Acts. And I think that is most likely the case with a lot of you out there who are coming to this study, and there are those who are just not that familiar with this part of the narrative. So when we come to these names of all these historical figures like Herod, Felix, and Festus, and tonight we're going to look at yet another one, King Agrippa. These are just names to us. And even in your own personal study, in your own personal reading time, if you're reading the book of Acts and you get to these last chapters, there's a tendency to just kind of want to gloss through all this. And because you notice it's very heavy on a historical aspect. And so we've got all these names mentioned in the book of Acts, and I want us to have a better understanding as to why Luke put these things in the narrative, why these people are significant. Before I get into that, though, let me just take the time to remind you of something that we discussed right at the very beginning of our study. Because we need to remember who the audience was for this letter. Okay, Luke wrote Acts as a historical treatise to Theophilus. You remember who Theophilus was. Theophilus once served as high priest, and he was also a Sadducee. So we have many themes in topics discussed in the book of Acts for which there is very little detail given. And the reason for that was because Luke made the assumption that his reader, in this case Theophilus, he made the assumption that his reader would already be familiar with the details of these matters. So let us never forget who the original audience was for this letter. And that is probably the most important aspect to consider in a study of any biblical passage, for that matter. Again, this goes to establishing context. Let's consider the historical background here briefly. And again, this is by no means going to be exhaustive. I'm just hitting the high points here. So there's going to be a lot of detail left out. So I don't want any, you know, I'm sure I'm going to get comments, or we're going to get emails saying, well, you forgot to mention this, and you don't understand that this was important. This had to do with this. I understand that. Like I said, I don't want to really get bogged down in details here. This is just a very brief bird's eye view. Because I know that there are going to be some of you out there who may not be familiar with the Roman occupation of Israel. But this will give you a rough idea just so we can move on in our study. So, Israel fell to Rome around the year 64 BC. And like most of the other conquered territories, the areas were reorganized into provinces, and these provinces were placed under the authority of regional governors. And there was a lot of unrest that remained in this region of Israel. But there is one notable name that comes up. Around the year 4 BC, the region of Judea, okay, this included Jerusalem, the region of Judea was under the authority of the governor of the province of Syria. Now, Syria is up in the north. You can look at a map and you can see the various, if you look at a map of Israel and that part of the Mediterranean during the first century and before and just prior to that, you can see the various provinces. You've got Syria, and then there's Judea, and there's Idumea. I think I'm saying it right. But you've got, you can see the outlines of the various regions. And Syria is up north. Around 4 BC, the region of Judea was actually under the authority of the governor of Syria. And that governor's name was Quirinius. Quirinius. It was under his authority, that name should be familiar to us, it was under his authority that some amount of order came to the region. He was able to put down a lot of the unrest and a lot of the uprisings that were occurring there among the Jewish population. It was under his authority that some amount of order came to this region, and this is revealed by his ordering of the first census for taxation purposes that ever took place in this region. Now, this should sound familiar to us because this is the very same event that is referenced in Luke chapter 2, verse 2. Luke chapter 2, verse 2 talks about a taxation that occurred when, and the King James, it says, it's transliterated Cyrenius, but that is the name for the governor, Quirinius, was his actual name. King James transliterates it as Cyrenius, but Cyrenius and Quirinius is the same person. Okay, and of course, you know the story with Joseph and his espoused wife, Mary, travel from Nazareth down to Bethlehem because they were both born, they can trace their lineage back to Bethlehem, so they had to go to their home cities in order to be counted for taxation purposes. Okay, this is in the year 4 BC. Now, even though the Roman provinces were ruled by local governors, the emperor allowed Israel to still have a king as a means of trying to appease the Jews. Keeping them in line, trying to stave off revolts. Of course, the king was approved and appointed and approved by the emperor of Rome, Caesar. The most well-known of these kings was Herod the Great. You'll recall that it was Herod the Great who is known for the slaughter of all the male babies at the time of Jesus' birth. Now, after Herod the Great died, his kingdom was divided into four territories, and rule was given over to each of his four sons, who were known as tetrarchs. Okay, they have the tetra, which means four, archs, okay, which refers to rulers or captains or chiefs. Okay, so we have this this word tetrarch, meaning ruler of one fourth. So what you ended up with in Israel was this dynasty of the Herodians. You can all trace their lineage back to Herod the Great. These Herodians, who were kept in power by Rome because of their loyalty to Rome. So now when we get to our text for tonight, we are introduced to this King Agrippa. His full name is actually Herod Agrippa II. Okay? Herod Agrippa II. So what we see here is simply another king in this dynastic line of the Herodians, who is the king over Israel, who serves at the pleasure of the Roman Emperor Caesar. King Agrippa II would have been the great-grandson of Herod the Great. So you just get an idea of how closely in line. So we're talking about four generations from Herod the Great. Okay? What is critical to understand here, and I think often overlooked, these kings in this dynasty of the Herodians are Jewish. Okay, these are ethnic Jews. So that means they are going to be familiar with Jewish customs and religious traditions and things pertaining to the law. Keep that in mind, because that is going to be relevant later. Not so much in this lesson tonight. We'll touch on it a little bit here at the end. But the next lesson, this is going to become critically important when we get to the next part next week. And I'll remind you of this again when we come to it next week. So before we get into the text here, just a few more things about King Agrippa. His father was Herod Agrippa I. And we actually studied him several months ago. If you remember, when we looked at Acts chapter 12, you can go back to Acts chapter 12, and Herod Agrippa I was the one who was responsible for the death of the Apostle James, who was the brother of John. And you remember how he gave this great speech one day, and all the people said that this was the voice of a god, and how God struck him dead, and he was eaten of worms. You remember that? Okay, that was Agrippa the first. Agrippa the second was his son. And so he would have ascended to the throne following the death of his father, Agrippa the first. Also during this time, you have the other tetrarchs or the other rulers of a fourth, who had their authority rescinded by Rome for various reasons, either because of corruption or because they didn't manage things well in their territory. They allowed too many revolts, too many uprisings. They didn't maintain the order satisfactorily to Rome's satisfaction. And so they would have had their territories rescinded. And those territories would have been absorbed and given into the authority then of another tetrarch. So King Agrippa at this point would have had rule over a much larger region than his father or his grandfather had. Another historical fact is that the seat of government for this region was in Caesarea and not Jerusalem. And that's why we see this reference to Herod's palace being in Caesarea. Remember, if you recall to a few lessons ago, when Paul was first taken to Caesarea and Felix put him in Herod's palace. Remember that? He had Paul put under guard in Herod's palace, which was there in Caesarea. And that's because that whole province, that whole region was governed from Caesarea and not Jerusalem. Now, here is something else I learned in my research that I missed from the previous lesson. Agrippa II had two sisters. He had two sisters. Now pay attention here. One of his sisters was Beatrice, and we see her name come up in our text tonight, okay? And the other was Drusilla. Now, Drusilla should be a familiar name to us as well. We just talked about her. Drusilla, you will recall, was the wife of Felix, the previous governor. You can go back to Acts chapter 24 and verse 24, we were told that she was a Jewess. And we spent some time talking about the significance of that. Okay? The significance that she was Jewish. Okay? And that was important because she was going to give some insight into this whole, all these accusations that the Jews were bringing against Paul. And so we talked about the significance of that. The reason she was Jewish, we learn now, is that in actuality, she was the brother of Agrippa II, okay, the king, the Jewish king at the time. And so yet here is yet another piece of this puzzle, and we see this significance of these rulers and others in places of authority who are familiar with Jewish customs and traditions and the law, and they're playing a major role in these events with Paul while he is in Roman custody. So that finally brings us to our text for tonight's lesson. And so let's begin reading. We are in Acts chapter 25, and I'm going to start at verse 13. You can follow along with me as I read. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice, I'm sorry, I said Beatrice, didn't I? Bernice, and I actually have Bernice written in my notes, and I think I said Beatrice, so I apologize for that. Bernice. Okay, so remember, Bernice is Agrippa's sister. Okay, after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came unto Caesarea to salute Festus. And you remember, Festus is now the current governor of the province of Judea. Verse 14, and when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause to the king, saying, there is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. To whom I answered, it is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die, before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay, on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accusers stood up, let me interject something here. Let me interject something. I didn't mean to do this, but this comes to mind now as I'm reading this. Verse 17, it says, therefore, when they were come hither without delay, I sat in the judgment seat. Now, if you recall, Festus is trying to make this look like he expedited this whole process. But if you recall, when he went to Jerusalem, didn't he spend a great number of days there in Jerusalem before he returned to Caesarea? Okay, he didn't move all that quickly on this matter. He's leading King Agrippa to believe, is he? So let's just keep that in mind. The way that Festus is trying to spin this here. Okay, so without any delay, on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusations of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. All right, let's stop there for a second. I want to point out here that what is happening is very straightforward. If you take the time to dissect this, you can easily get the gist of what's going on here. So it shouldn't take us very long to get through these three paragraphs of tonight's text. In fact, I think tonight's lesson, it's going to be a very short lesson tonight, which is great because that'll give us plenty of time for discussion afterwards. And I know I've said that before, and I ended up going on for an hour anyway, but I really think we're going to get through this lesson quickly tonight. But there's a lot here in this first paragraph alone. I think we need to understand that when it comes right down to it, even though Agrippa holds the title of king, he serves at the pleasure of Caesar. Okay? Agrippa is really nothing more than a figurehead. And I brought this up when we did our brief historical review at the beginning of tonight's lesson. Okay, the king of Israel is appointed by Caesar and is approved by Caesar. So he's there to help keep the peace and to help keep the people in line, help keep the Jewish people in line and appease them more or less. But he's got a loyalty to Caesar. Okay. That being said, Festus, in this case being the provincial governor, Festus is the one who serves as the local representative of Caesar and the governing authority of that region. Okay. Agrippa has really no authority per se. The authority resides with Festus. So that would mean then that Agrippa's position is subordinate to Festus. One other thing I will point out here. You notice that Festus doesn't really know what to do with Paul. Do you see that? Are you catching on to that? Remember that it is Paul's right, the Roman citizen, to have his case heard directly before Caesar. He's being accused of treason now. Remember that. He's being accused of treason against Rome. And so whenever there's a case of treason, one of the rights of a Roman citizen, if he's accused specifically of treason, he can take his case directly to Caesar. At the same time, Festus doesn't really know the full scope of what Paul is accused of. Here again, he doesn't really understand the Jews' complaint against him. That was the same thing, it was just like that with Felix. Felix didn't understand. And he brought his wife Drusilla in on the matter so that she could try to explain some of these things. So if there is some legitimate complaint against Paul, okay, think this is Festus' reasoning here. Okay, if he's going to assume that there is some legitimate complaint against Paul, he seems to be reserving the right to declare a ruling against Paul if he can find one. Okay, he's holding out. He's trying to play both sides here. And here is where this whole scene with Agrippa comes into play. Now, let's look closely at this. First, notice that Agrippa is there for some time before Festus even brings up Paul's case. It's almost like an afterthought. Verse 14 says he had been there many days. And then he was just kind of like, oh, hey, you know, I got this guy, Paul, that my predecessor left here. We don't know how long Agrippa has been there, but here again, all of a sudden Festus is like, oh, yeah, there's this Paul guy. Now, the way he brings this up to Agrippa is interesting. You notice how he dances on this line between his own authority and having to clean up someone else's mess. He says, there is a certain man left in bonds by Felix. Now, while it is true that Paul was arrested under Felix's purview as current governor, Festus chooses to now make any ruling himself regarding Paul. What we have here is Festus is trying to take a situation where he was showing weakness by being indecisive and passing it off on his predecessor. You know, he's like, I got this guy Paul, and I don't really know what to do with him. But it's really Felix's fault. Felix, I've got to clean up Felix's mess. Okay, that's a very weak position that he's put himself in right now. Verse 15, he says, regarding Paul, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. Now, this verse is significant when we understand that the ruling class of the Jews, specifically the high priest is appointed by Agrippa. Okay? So whoever is serving as high priest right now in Jerusalem, he was appointed by Agrippa. Okay? That was part of his authority as king, to appoint the high priest. And of course, the high priest then is the head of the ruling class of all the Sanhedrin, you know, the elected officials. And the priests and the scribes, all the elders sitting on the council, Sanhedrin. Okay, so these guys answer to Agrippa, don't they? And now we have this subtle little jab at Agrippa with this statement. Festus is kind of saying, your boys here, you know what your boys are up to? Okay, he's informing Agrippa about this, and at the same time, it would seem that perhaps he's hoping that Agrippa will address the matter. You know, it's almost like these guys that you're in charge of, they brought me this case. You should be the one to handle this, don't you think? You know? So he's hoping that Agrippa is going to address this matter so that he doesn't have to deal with it. You see that? It becomes even more apparent when you look at the rest of this statement. Look at verse 16. Festus goes on to say, to whom I answered, meaning the chief priests and the elders, he answered them that it is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die. Before that, he which is accused have the accusers face to face and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. Therefore, when they were come hither without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat. By the way, that word is bema. Bema means judgment seat. And commanded the man to be brought forth against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusations of such things as I supposed. You see this? See, Festus wasn't expecting this now. Festus thought this was going to be a simple, open and shut case. He had no idea that they were going to be bringing the accusations that they did. It took him completely by surprise. These were things about which he had no knowledge or expertise. He wasn't in a place where he could adequately judge. What were those things? Look at verse 19. They brought to him, what accusations did they bring? They were talking about certain questions against him of their own superstition and of one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. Take a look at that word doubted. I want you to circle that. Circle that word doubted. I want to call your attention to this. This is the Greek word apoureo. Apoureo. Now, this is a word we've seen before. Only the last, when we've seen it before, it's had the prefix dia in front of it. So, diaporeo. The prefix dia simply gives the idea of completely, completeness, or thoroughly. Okay, but the root meaning is the same. Okay, aporeo or diaporeo. It literally means to have nowhere to go. We saw this word used back in Acts 2 on the day of Pentecost with regard to those who could not explain the disciples when they were speaking in tongues. Remember? They had no explanation. And the word used there was diaporeo. It was beyond their ability to reason. They were backed into a corner, and they had nowhere to go. Okay, and remember, we talked about it. What happens when you reason someone into a corner, when you've completely refuted their argument, when they have no response to your argument? Usually what happens is the personal attacks begins, you know, the ad hominems. And we saw that's exactly what happened. They said, those guys are out of their mind. They must be drunk, you know. They must be drunk. That they had no other explanation. They had nowhere to go. Okay. The same word was used of those whom Paul reasoned with in the synagogues. Okay. They could not refute his teachings. They had nowhere to go. They could not argue their way out of it. Okay. And here, Festus is saying the same thing. Now, it lacks the prefix dia, but again, the root word is the same, aporeo. Felix says, I didn't know what to do. He says, I was stuck. Okay? They had these questions, and because I didn't know what to do, I asked them if Paul would go to Jerusalem with them. Okay? Now, lost my place in my notes. Let me get back to where I was. This is what happens when I start to ad lib and go off script. Okay. So, Festus says, I was stuck. With the accusations they brought against Paul, I didn't know how to handle it. So I asked Paul if he would go with them to Jerusalem and let them decide the matter. Now, this would have easily solved many problems for Festus, wouldn't it? First and foremost, it would have completely absolved him of any responsibility. If the Jews had judged and executed Paul, at least it would not be on his head. Hey, that sounds an awful lot like what Pilate did with Jesus, doesn't it? Sounds familiar. And Festus is looking for a way that he can put this case out of his jurisdiction. We've seen that happen before. This is very similar with what Gallio did with Paul at Corinth. Although Gallio wasn't in the same predicament as Festus was, because with Gallio, it was clear that the matter was religious and not a civil issue. And so clearly Gallio could not claim jurisdiction in his case. In fact, he threw them out. He said, you guys judge that amongst yourselves. This is not for me to decide, and I'm not going to let you use my court to enforce your orthodoxy. Do you remember that? Okay. it clearly was not a case for Gallio to decide. Now, Festus here, Festus isn't so sure. He doesn't know what to do. He's got accusations. There's both civil and religious matters at stake here, particularly because we've got this accusation of treason that he's got to deal with. And that's the very reason why Paul would not consent to go with the Jews. He said, I'm being accused of treason. Okay? He said, I'm being accused of treason here. I have the right to have my case heard directly by Caesar. And so Festus is left with no choice at this point, and he states that very thing in verse 21. Verse 21 says, but when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Okay. So you see, there's a lot going on in that paragraph. And like I said, if you just read over it, it's easy to miss all this, especially when you don't have the historical context to work with. And you can kind of see now why I want to take the time at the beginning of our lesson tonight to go over all that. Now, again, it's been several days. Agrippa has been there several days before Festus even brings this up. And so I think it dawns on him at this point that maybe he can get Agrippa to deal with this matter. It's almost as if he's hoping that Agrippa would take an interest in this case. And so we see that after explaining all of this, Agrippa takes the bait. Look at verse 22. I've said this before. You can't make this stuff up, folks. This is almost like something you'd see happening in a movie or a novel, okay? The calculating, the manipulating that's happening here, this is good literature. this is very intriguing stuff that's happening here. Verse 22, Agrippa takes the bait. Then Agrippa says unto Festus, I would also hear of the man myself. And you can almost see Festus kind of pumping his fist, saying, yes, exactly what I wanted. Yes. You know, can you kind of see that happening? You know, of course, he's doing that on the inside. He's not going to say that out loud. But I can almost feel Festus on the inside kind of doing, you know, backflip. He's so excited that maybe he doesn't have to deal with this now, after all. And so Festus says, tomorrow, said he, tomorrow thou shalt hear him. And on the morrow, the next day, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, his sister, with great pomp, Festus made a great to-do about this, didn't he? He's really trying to schmooze Agrippa here, isn't he? He's really putting on the risk for Agrippa. He really wants Agrippa to take this case, doesn't he? You see this? And was entered into the place of hearing with chief captains and principal men of the cities. At Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. You remember, this is taking place in Caesarea. This is the seat of government for the province. And all the important heads of state are there. So this is once again a civil hearing, not a Jewish hearing, a Roman hearing, not a Jewish religious hearing. But the intent here is for an opportunity for Agrippa to hear all the testimony. Notice that the religious leaders aren't there. Paul gets a chance to be able to give his testimony directly to King Agrippa. And Festus still thinks this is a religious matter. And again, the hope is that Agrippa will hear Paul. And remember, Agrippa is himself a Jew. He appoints the high priest. He's knowledgeable about Jewish law and traditions. Hopefully, he'll be able to help Festus make a decision he'll take this case off his hands. And he's, what he's really hoping here is that Agrippa will say, yep, this is a religious matter. We need to deal with this at Jerusalem. That's what he wants. So we come to verse 24, and now Festus is going to make introductions. Verse 24, and Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, ye see this man, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my lord, wherefore I have brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have something to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes against him. Okay, so now we see yet another point of Festus' dilemma. He's going to send Paul to Caesar, but he can't just send him to Caesar without any specific charges. Look at what Festus says in verse 26. He says, I have no certain thing to write unto my lord. My lord in this case being Caesar. Okay? He says, I really don't know what the charges are. I can't send him to Caesar without specific charges. So that's why we are up here. And so maybe after you hear what Paul has to say to you, King Agrippa, you'll be able to inform me about these matters of your Jewish laws, so I have something to put in the charges. Now, that may all be true, very well be true, but it still seems like a pretense to me. I still really think he wants to wash his hands of this matter altogether and get Agrippa to take the case himself. But look, I said, you can see the calculating and the manipulating going on here. And that's all I have for us tonight with this lesson. But when we get to next week's lesson, this is the part I can't wait to get to. Because Paul makes a statement to Agrippa, and Agrippa's response is incredible. So all of this is building us up at climax. And so I look forward to getting that part of the lesson next week, because I think it is really a blessing. And so having said that, let's open things up for comments and questions here. I know we've probably have Paul and Susan on hold with us right now, and I will bring them on in just a second. Again, for those of you who want to be a part of the program, the phone number, if you'd like to call in, is area code 347-855-8317. That's 347-855-8317. You can connect using your Skype account. It's free for you to use your Skype account. You can email us at email address is mail@ttanc.com. That's mail@ttank.com. You can make comments on the program down at the bottom of the screen. And we've got Paul and Susan on the line with us now. At least I think we've got Susan also. Paul, are you there?
So I look forward to getting that part of the lesson next week, because I think it is really a blessing.
Hello, Paul. Are you there?
Well, let's open things up to comments questions here. I know we've probably have Paul and Susan on hold.
Paul, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Hold on just a second.
Okay.
Yeah, I was listening to it on the computer and the phone both, just to see which would be best.
Okay. can hear you fine.
Okay, so the broadcast was pretty clear tonight. Thanks for the lesson and the historical research. Very intriguing, but again, mostly narrative. But I think you've supplied a very valuable service in that many of the disciples don't have time or maybe studying in other areas of the Bible. So it's nice to have that research already done for us, and we appreciate it. Again, it's mostly narrative, as the book of Acts is, but I think that it presents, an interesting study of what one might expect if we did come under some kind of persecution in this country for what we believe. But all in all, in looking at the historical background that you have presented and what went on, the Roman government really wasn't all that horrible of a government to be under, as far as I can tell.
It's interesting that you bring that up. And that's worth noting. As far as persecution goes, at least during this particular time frame, the Roman government was very tolerant towards Christianity, wasn't it? Where do you see the persecution coming from? It wasn't from the Roman government. It was from the religious establishment, wasn't it? And I think that's very telling.
Yeah, during this time, later on, of course, you had Nero, and that might have been a different story. And I have done very little bit of study during, historically on that. But basically, for the most part, I think I mentioned this the last time we studied, I think Rome was a democracy, if I'm not mistaken. Was really more interested in business as usual than controlling every jot and tittle of the masses. And but they didn't like anybody, any cultures or any people mucking up business as usual. Okay? And, a lot of the Jewish sects were a thorn in Rome's side for a long time. And then, of course, finally they had enough. And Titus went in 70 A.D. and just levels Jerusalem. Okay? But for the most part in our studies here, it's all very interesting. I particularly enjoyed the insight that we got as far as the Jews trying to manipulate a Roman court to do their bidding as far as enforcing their orthodoxy. And as we know, that did not go well for the men who tried to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, all very interesting. But again, during this time, basically, life under Rome was didn't appear to be all that bad. The Roman, you know, the Roman leaders weren't the most moral guys around.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, they seem to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
most definitely.
Roman citizens, obviously, their rights were protected.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say,
was Susan able to be with us tonight?
No, she got home late. She's having to go back, you know, back and forth due
mm-hmm.
to our situation, as you know it. So,
right
off after work, she's got to go run several errands, and
okay.
She just got back. Oh, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes ago, something like that. So,
well, you give her you give her my regards and tell her I'm sorry that we missed her tonight and she wasn't able to join us. I look forward to hearing her her comments and her insights at the end of our lessons. I value her input greatly.
Yeah, she'll be able to be here next week when we get into, I guess, the meat of Paul's presentation of the gospel.
That is going to be fantastic. There's something in that testimony in the dialogue that goes on between Paul and Agrippa that not many people pick up on, and it's very subtle because of the way that the cumbersome grammar that's in the King James, the way that it's translated, the grammar is very cumbersome, but it's very interesting that exchange that happens between Paul and Agrippa. I can't wait to get to that part. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll be warmed up on it and be well prepared. So it's less of a narrative and more of a good study on Paul's presentation of the gospel. And which is always worthy of looking into in depth. And so I'll be looking forward to that.
All righty then. Well, if there's nothing else that you have to add, we'll go ahead and let you go. And you have a great rest of your evening.
All right. God bless. And thank you again for your hard work in the book of Acts.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good. Bye-bye. All right, and I guess with that we will go ahead and just wrap up our lesson for tonight. And you heard us discussing it. I'm really looking forward to next week's lesson. I can't wait to get started on that and the preparation for it, and actually present that next week. And so I do hope that you will join us next week as we continue our study in the Book of Acts. Until then, I want you to have a good rest of the evening, rest of the week. We'll see you next time.
I came to Planned Parenthood seeking women's healthcare services.
I came to Planned Parenthood for birth control.
They made a priority to make sure that I knew all of the information and that I felt comfortable.
Because the atmosphere here is one of acceptance and understanding and health.
Why would I go anywhere else?
We are Planned Parenthood Southwest Ohio, the region's most trusted reproductive health care provider. Go to ppswo.org to find the health center nearest you.
I came to Planned Parenthood seeking women's healthcare services.
I came to Planned Parenthood for birth control.
They made a priority to make sure that I knew all of the information and that I felt comfortable.
Because the atmosphere here is one of acceptance and understanding and health.
Why would I go anywhere else?
We are Planned Parenthood Southwest Ohio, the region's most trusted reproductive health care provider. Go to ppswo.org to find the health center nearest you.